Welcome to a very special review show with myself. I'm Jeff, Graham and Darren. Now, those of you who follow Darren on Twitter, and his Twitter handle is Dazza Loves Movies, all one word, will know he's a big wrestling fan. And in that capacity, Darren gave Graham and I a challenge. As we don't know much about the sport, okay, I'll be honest, we know next to nothing about it.
Absolutely nothing.
Darren asked us to go watch the new film, The Iron Claw, without reading anything about it. Why? Obviously, so we can make this podcast. No, seriously, as we knew nothing about the true story behind the film, Darren wanted to know what the impact of the story would be on us and if it was surprising. Now, I will say at this point, if you haven't seen The Iron Claw, turn off this podcast, put it in your save file, go watch the film and come back and listen to this, what I'm sure is going to be a fascinating but spoiler-heavy show. For everyone else, a brief recap before I hand over to Darren. The Iron Claw is the true and turbulent story of the Von Erich wrestling family, starting in the 1960s and ending in the 1990s. It stars Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, and Lily James.
Ever since I was a child, people said my family was cursed. Mom tried to protect us with God. Pop tried to protect us with wrestling. He said if we were the toughest, the strongest, nothing could ever hurt us. I believed him. We all did.
I will now hand over to Darren, who will put more flesh on the bones of that very brief synopsis, and who will lead the discussion on what we thought about the film. Over to you, Darren.
Hi, and I just want to say thank you for doing this with me. I thought this would be an interesting exercise because obviously this film was a massive big deal amongst wrestling fans, and being part of a wrestling fan community, there was a lot of discussion about it. One of the conversation that we were having going into it was how much it would actually change or use dramatic license and change the actual story to fit into a movie. And I always go with the impression that if you want the true story, you go for a documentary or read a book. A film based on a true story is always going to be trying to tell the best story it can for a film. So I went it from that perspective. However, I have to say, even coming in with that, because I knew the story so well, like most wrestling fans do, I did have a few little preconceived things that I was wanting. And that did affect how I watched the film. And also, of course, I knew everything that was sort of coming up with the fate of all the brothers and everything. So I thought it would be really interesting to talk to two guys who basically didn't know the story and see how you basically sort of reacted to a lot of this. And I have to say that some of my friends were very nitpicky about certain things. They were sort of, for example, that they didn't like how one wrestler was shorter than the others, which wasn't in the case in real life, and how one wrestler's physique was wrong for the character that played him, and little things like that, which I basically rolled my eyes out. But again, there were some things that changed that did sort of kind of think, oh, I wish we wouldn't have done that. So anyway, my first question is basically, obviously, what were your both thoughts of the film, just watching it, you know, without any sort of like knowledge? And did the story shock you? Did you get emotional? I just want to know, you know, what and did you find the whole thing actually believable, the actual that so much could happen to this one family?
And I apologise to any wrestling fans who are watching this. I had no clue about this family at all. And I found the film harrowing. I really found it quite... I thought, who the hell's going to die next? You know, I didn't know that, you know, he lost all his brothers. I thought the father, the actor who played the father, was fantastic. And he was just so overbearing. And I couldn't understand what his motivation was. But I thought the brothers worked well together. They became the sort of this unit, these brothers, almost against their father. So I thought it was put together well. I thought it was well directed, but a few little bits where I had a bit of a problem with the bit where they go, where one of the brothers goes across the river of Styx, as it were, and pays the ferryman. I thought that was a bit much, but the actual plot points or the beats in it were very, very good. And I thought, you know, as each brother died in various ways, I just thought, how can this man go on? And I really, it sort of made me want to really go back home and read the Wikipedia page and find out what really happened. I was quite surprised about the fact that there was another brother who didn't even get mentioned in the film. There were like four brothers, not three brothers. I thought it was just fascinating, grim. I wouldn't say it was hard going because it, I mean, Lily James's character brightens the mood and she's quite fun. And but yes, I thought it was amazing. And I liked the point that the one brother thought that there was a curse on the family and didn't want to infect his sons with this curse. I just thought it was, for somebody who knew nothing about it, I was really entranced by it. Oh, great time. Great time. Jeff?
Well, similar. I was certainly enthralled and, as you say, entranced by it. I was fascinated to know what was going to come next. Having stayed away, I followed Darren's instructions to the letter and sat in that cinema seat. And the first thing that comes up is the certificate card that gives away three things that's going to happen in the film, which did knock me a little bit. So much for trigger warnings. But as a film, I enjoyed the first hour more than the second hour, where you got to understand the brothers, the dynamic within the family, how they worked as a unit, how the father was being driven, but not tyrannically driven at this stage. Oh, I didn't think so. I thought the mother was slightly more odd than the father, to be honest, in the first half. But as the film went on and the tragedies occurred, the suicide, the deaths and so forth, I felt it played it all as one note. There were no ups and downs. In other words, the melodramatic aspect that I would expect was missing. I'll give you an example. When Jeremy Allen White is in an accident and loses part of his leg, you see him driving towards the accident, the screen cuts to black, and then you see him some months later hobbling to the kitchen with, you know, one foot missing. So things like that, where they could have played that up and they played it down, it just made it all of one note. So I understand what Sean Durkin was trying to do, but I felt he missed an opportunity to make it more populist. That aside, the one time in the film, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, is when Zac Efron gets into a ring. Who was the fighter he was wrestling with, Darren?
That's Ric Flair. One thing that most wrestling fans are united about is that the actor who played Ric Flair did an absolutely horrible job. And I agree. He was very cringe worthy. If you compare him doing his like interview with what the real Ric Flair does, that was one of the down points of the film.
Okay.
Again, not knowing anything about wrestling, I equated his performance to something like Henry Winkler in The One and Only, that over-the-top type of characterization. But for me, at that moment, that film came alive. It suddenly had a power and an energy that I felt a lot the rest of the film was missing. Although I did like the film, I don't think it's a film you can say you enjoyed because of the tragedy, but I just thought it didn't play the melodramatic aspects of the film as I thought it would have done. But on the whole, I really enjoyed it. In summary, first half was better than the second half, but I was transfixed throughout.
And Zac Efron delivered a career-best performance, I
would say. Well, I think him, Jeremy Allen White and Lily James were all amazing. So that's the novice's view. You're the expert, Darren. What did you think of it?
I thought it was a great film. I actually agree with you. I think the first half of the movie was a lot stronger. When you were getting to know the brothers, when they were, and you got that sort of dark, like, for example, that scene where the smuggled Mike, who was the one who wanted to be a musician, out of the house so he could go and play guitar. And it was that sort of thing that he sort of is, you know, his parents, that they didn't approve of him wanting to be a musician and going to a rock club, but they were quite happy for him to get beaten up and slammed around in a ring when he didn't actually want to. I think that was sort of, you know, the fact that whole thing where you got the camaraderie of the brothers and you got to know them as characters, about like, you know, like Kevin, the Zac Efron character, how shy he was with Lily James and stuff like that. I did like the first half a lot better. And I think you're right on the fact that it was so one note, the rest of it. It's like when you actually got to the deaths, like the first death, the Mike death, which should have been like this really sort of like incredible shock scene. It was almost bland how it was delivered, how Kevin goes back to the house and his dad's just sat there and he just tells him that he's died. One of the things that actually happened in real life is that the guy who got the phone call from Japan to say that David was dead, and he basically went to drive over to the house, and he says that when he got there, Fritz, the dad, opened the door, saw the look on his face, and the first thing he said was, "Which one?" And that to me would have been like a really dramatic line to put in the movie. The thing about it was, that shows you drugs was rife amongst all of them. They had a reputation, some of them, turning up for shows drunk or stoned. They would do public appearances where they'd basically be sort of in no fit way to perform. And one of the wrestling promoters actually went up to Fritz one time and said, "You need to do something about your boys because they'd be spiraling." And Fritz fired that promoter who told him. So to me, that line about like which one, that would have sort of shown that it wasn't a surprise that one of the brothers had actually passed away. And I think that is something in the first half of the film that I think we're trying to make them more likable as opposed to sort of like, you know, this be a drug story.
See, in the context of the film, I don't think that line would have worked because they're all shown as wholesome.
Yeah.
There's nobody, you know, nobody taking drugs, nobody drinking. Well, they had a drink, but just a couple of bottles of beer and things like that. Yeah.
And that's one of the things where they change the reality. If you watch that film, you get the impression that there was only one of them who had a drug problem, which was Kerry. Because he'd had a drug problem for like years. He'd been arrested several times. There were such celebrities that they got away with a lot. It caught up with him in the end. And when he committed suicide, he was actually facing jail, because he'd been arrested with possession of drugs and trying to forge prescriptions.
Is it true that when he started wrestling, and obviously after he'd lost his foot, a lot of people didn't know he'd lost his foot?
That is something that they kept quiet. Initially, he didn't lose the entire foot. It was surgically repaired. But he got into training and wrestling so fast that eventually at some point he injured it beyond repair and the whole thing had to be amputated. At what point that happened, I don't think we actually know. They basically tried to keep that a secret because they didn't think it would be, they didn't want it to hurt the markability and his sex appeal. Another reason as well is that some athletic boards, because believe it or not, wrestling still fell under the jurisdiction of athletics board because they were doing live events as such. And so in some states where basically amputees weren't allowed to perform or take part in athletic competition, they could have basically stopped that from happening. In fact, this shows how petty the wrestling business can be. Kerry Von Erich was going to do a really big show somewhere, and the WWF, who were the big New York promotion that basically took over wrestling for the entire country, they put in a complaint with the athletic board saying, "We believe this guy has got an amputated foot and he should not be allowed to wrestle." But that's how petty the wrestling business can be. They tried to keep it secret. And there was one instance where in a wrestling match, his boot actually accidentally came off. A wrestler was doing like a leg hold and accidentally pulled his boot off. And there was this gasp because the fans saw that it was basically a sock with nothing in it. And Kerry like rushed out of the ring and put his leg under the ring until he managed to put his boot on.
Graham mentioned when he gave his view on the film that there was another brother that he read about after, and I read about him as well. Do you think cutting that character worked against the film? Or because they seem to amalgamate two brothers into one for the movie. Did you miss that character?
Okay, so here's the thing. The brother in question was a young lad called Chris Von Erich. And he was the youngest brother. Unlike Mike, who was the brother who wanted to be the musician, Chris really did want to be a wrestler. And so when his time came up, he couldn't wait to get into the ring and be a wrestler and following his brother's footsteps. The problem was he had a lot of illness when he was a child. He had asthma quite badly. And because he had a lot of medication, this medication is said to have stunted his growth. So athletically, he wasn't able to do the things that was needed as a professional wrestler. Despite this, when he got to a sort of a certain age, and because they'd lost David and Mike, his dad was quite happy to get him into the ring. And because he was a Von Erich, he got onto shows and stuff. And he just didn't have the ability to be a wrestler. He wasn't a good enough athlete. And he was almost like a laughing stock because he was so bad. At the end of year awards, a lot of the magazines and newsletters had, there's always like a worst wrestler category, and he basically was voted that in the thing, and he just couldn't become the wrestler that he wanted to be. And so he felt, unlike the other brothers, he felt that he'd let the family down, and he took his own life at the age of, I think, 21, I think he was. And I think I understand why he was left out of the film, partly because you'd already got three other brothers' stories and deaths that they would have to go through. And so, you know, it would have been, I think, over the top and just pushed things just too far. Also, as well, I think his story was very similar to Mike's, with the exception that Mike didn't want to be a wrestler. So I think that story would be too much like what actually happened to Mike. I think it would have just been like going over it again with another brother.
Mm. I mean, the father, to me, beautifully underplayed, but he was just evil. You'd think that once he'd lost two sons, or even the first son, he would start to look after them and try and encourage them and do something else. But he never seemed to change. Is it quite true about him? Is he a psychopath that drives his family to destruction?
Actually, I think the film went easy on him.
Holy cow!
In real life, I think he was a lot worse. Now, I'll give you a couple of examples. One thing that I don't think the film really puts across is how much he actually exploited his son's deaths. So, for example, when David died in real life, they did a tribute, because they had a weekly wrestling show. They put together a tribute show to David. David's one that died in Japan. Yeah, so they did this tribute episode to him, and this interview with Fritz and the brothers sat outside. And in it, you can tell that Fritz is basically using David's death as a promotional tool, because he already starts talking about how one of his brothers is now going to go for the world title, which is what would actually end up happening, is that basically because of the sort of what had happened, because they got such a large crowd for the big match between Kerry and Ric Flair, when Kerry won the title, they gave Kerry the title just for 2 weeks. Mm. After that, they went to Japan, and then Kerry lost the belt back to Ric Flair. So it was just like a 2 week deal. I think to give the Texas fans like a real, like, you know, basically a big moment. Fritz really exploited that. For a start, he pushed for that. But also, in the interview, he starts talking about Mike, who at that point, I think he'd started wrestling, but he wasn't like sort of, like, he'd not been doing it long. And in the interview, he's selling Mike as David's replacement, because he's saying, I look at Mike and he looks just like David, and he's got the skills that David has. It's almost like he was putting him forward as David's replacement. And then on the day of the big world title match, which got this big, massive audience at Texas Stadium, he put the prices up on any merchandise regarding David. So the photographs and the sort of everything like that, he put the prices up, you know, because he knew that there'd be a big demand for them. And then later on, when Mike went down with the toxic shock, he then pushed that Mike's going to come back as a wrestler, and he's going to be strong, and he's going to be a world champion. He did this interview where, and Mike's, in this interview that he did with Mike at this press conference, in the film, funnily enough, it actually shows you Kevin the Zac Efron character doing the interview with Mike, but it was actually Fritz who did it in real life. And he was basically saying into the camera, and Mike's there basically looking like a ghost of a shell in this interview, and just sort of not quite there and hardly able to string two words together. And my dad's there saying he's going to be a wrestler again, and he's going to be better than ever, and he's going to be a champion. And you can see already he's pushing to promote him as a wrestler. And just things like that he did his entire life. I mean, later on in life, he did a storyline where he pretended that he'd had a heart attack in the ring. And so, and then if, depending on the next show, obviously people would go to a show to find out his condition. And if the crowds were up, they'd say he was getting better. And then if the crowds were down, they'd say he'd have a relapse. So, it was just things, the stuff is... A lot of things that that he did were left out of the film, but basically I think would have really given Holt McCallany a lot more to work on.
Your job is to wrestle. Live up to that deal or we are through.
I told you to look out for him!
I just love being out there with you guys. It's the only thing that matters to me.
The Bonner will forever be the greatest family in the history of wrestling.
I mean, one thing that I actually did, they did film this, I'll film this in a minute, because they did film this and they took it out of the film, is that after David had died and one of the Von Erichs was injured, so we just had like one brother wrestling, Fritz basically brought in this wrestler, this good-looking guy who wasn't a very good wrestler, gave him the name Von Erich. He said, and they gave him a name Lance Von Erich and said, this is our cousin, Lance Von Erich. And brought, that just sort of like exploiting and then had him wrestle as, the Von Erichs' like cousin. So he basically just to replace an injured one of his sons. The funny thing was, they actually had a falling out.
God.
They had a falling out and Lance left the promotion. And so Fritz then went on television and did a press conference where he announced that Lance wasn't actually a Von Erich. And gave his real name out and saying that, he's never been a Von Erich and all this. And that was the sort of thing that basically turned the crowd, the fans against the Von Erichs. Because apart from all the deaths that was going, when we started finding out that the Von Erichs weren't the all-American milk-drinking boys that they were being portrayed as, and when we found out that Fritz was basically sending in wrestlers and lying to the fans about there being a cousin Von Erich, it really started to destroy the wrestling in Dallas. That is the sort of person that Fritz was. He even said, and this is another thing that I'm amazed didn't make it into the film, he actually said to Kevin after the other brothers had died, he said, if you had any guts, you'd kill yourself as well. And apparently did actually pull a gun on them. This is when he was getting old and getting senile, and actually pulled a gun on them, Kevin, at one point as well. But this, like I say, I think the film really sort of did not go into detail of what a bastard Fritz Von Erich was. And anyone who was reading like the newsletters at the time would have known this.
That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
In the film... To me, the father came across, Fritz came across as a pound shop tramp, playing everybody, but underneath has his own motives and his own fame and glory as, target number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, there seemed to be an implication in the film that he was fiddling the books. Because when the older brother, Kevin, is it, Zac Efron character, takes over the company, he starts looking at the books and, there's something not quite right about the money side of things.
The business really started to go downhill for a number of reasons. Part of it was basically what was happening with the brothers, and another part was that the fact that the WWF was basically pretty much taking over America and basically taking all the talent and the TV spots from all the promotions. And so they were basically spending more than they were, bringing in. He may have been fiddling the books. He is a wrestling promoter, so that would not surprise me in the slightest.
Okay,
yeah, true. Him pocketing stuff, that wouldn't surprise me.
Is it because of the timing of when WWF started that the brothers weren't involved in it, or were they always going to be on the outside because they were just too out of control?
They've done that. So basically, it was a family business. So they would basically be wanting to promote their business, basically, their territory, as it was. And how the WWF took over is they basically had a territory in New York. And that's where, back in those days, wrestling territory, they basically had a territory and they stuck to that. What WWF happened is when Vince McMahon took over, is he basically expanded out all across America, doing shows all across America, buying TV time across America, taking the talent, basically offering them more money to come to him. The Von Erichs was something that and the Dallas territory was something that the WWF kind of left alone, because it was such a strong territory and because it was such a so strong with the Von Erichs. Where they would try to basically take over other territories and pretty much wipe out the existing promoter and take it for himself, they never really tried that with Dallas. I think that's because they were so strong at that point. I think they would rather have worked together with Dallas rather than actually sort of try to take them over. Believe it or not, the Von Erich brothers, they wanted to try to expand as well, because they thought that they were sort of good enough that if they'd done shows in other territories, they could have expanded as well. But Fritz was against that. He felt that they basically should just stay in Dallas. I actually think that the WWF would have, if they could have, they would have taken the Von Erich brothers. Whether or not they would have been a big success, I don't know. The WWF ended up being like the sort of the big, massive physiques and over-the-top characters. So I don't know if they would actually have been, how big they would have been there. Kerry actually went there years later, and it actually establishes that in the film. And it shows you that while they're floundering, while you know, Kevin's running the business, is sort of going downhill, Kerry actually went to the WWF. But by this time, he was past it as a performer. He could do very little. And while they did do something with him initially, they made him like the Intercontinental Champion, which was like the second title below the world title. That only really lasted for a couple of months. And they even stopped calling him Kerry Von Erich. They just gave him the name Texas Tornado. And then after a while, his drug taking got out of control. He ended up being fired. Then he was facing the arrest, which led to his suicide. But yeah, it's one of those sort of what ifs in wrestling. What, you know, if he had have lived, what would have happened to him? But the consensus is that David might have been somebody that would have basically made the world champion. That might have gone to WWF. Who knows? But yeah, it. I'll be perfectly honest. The way, just from what I hear things, they probably wouldn't have basically made it in the WWF based on the fact that they were sort of, like you say, out of control. And because they were sort of bigger characters in there, we'll never know. But I think that the WWF, because they were basically taking anybody who was a star in their territory and giving them a go. And I actually think they would have basically tried to do something with the Von Erichs. It just, we just don't know how that would have worked out.
What about the wrestling community that saw it before you, which must have been frustrating, the fact that they were watching it last year? What are your friends' thoughts on it over in the States, Darren?
It's quite mixed. I've not heard of that many who actually didn't like the movie. Most people, like, you know, some loved it, some really, really liked it. Again, certain things sort of rankled certain people in different ways. How they altered the timelines. One of the big complaints that a lot of people have is they feel it didn't really do justice to how big stars the Von Erichs were. And that might be something that you guys could answer. The Von Erichs were massive. You know, they were doing, like, you know, sort of pizza commercials. The crowds were sort of were big. When they used to come to the arenas, as they used to, if you ever watch their entrances, they would have to hold the women back of the young girls, because baby bass was sort of like running forward and trying to kiss them and everything. And sometimes, but some of the things that Von Erichs would actually do would be quite sort of, it would be maybe a little bit inappropriate, because you'd have these like young girls whose ages you weren't 100% sure for. And if they'd sort of like get close to the Vulnerics, Vulnerics would, it's like just sort of give them like a really big tongue kiss. They were rock stars, you know. They, like I say, they sort of, they got away with things. So, you know, they got away with, like, if they got in trouble with the police, so, you know, signed a few autographs, and you know, they get to go on the way and stuff. And you know, they'd like sort of have nights where they'd go to a radio station and ask them to play all their favorite songs and stuff. They were massive. There were people I've spoke to, one of the complaints is it didn't really, he didn't get a sense of just how big they were through the film. It came across that they were like a little local act that was sort of big thing, yes, but not, yes, sort of like,
yeah, definitely.
Is that how you kind of saw it?
Yes, yeah, yeah, that's definitely how I saw it. They were sort of big in Dallas, and that was it, really.
Yeah. And that showmanship you're talking about, that also doesn't come across.
No.
They seem like homely kids, really, who have a talent, but they don't shout about their talent. Do you know what I mean? One of the interesting aspects is the one lad played by Jeremy Allen White, that was Kerry, who couldn't get into the Olympics, which, you know, because Carter cancelled the Olympics in 1980.
Yeah.
That was the biggest fame that they had.
I think that story is really exaggerated. He was a really good discus player, and he'd sort of done some state records and things like that. But I'm not 100% sure on this, but a lot of the stuff I've read from various things is that he was a really good discus player, but he wouldn't have been good enough to go to the Olympics anyway. I don't know if it's real or not, but somebody had pulled up a list of all the athletes who actually were going to the Olympics if they had thing, and Kerry's name wasn't on there. He was said to be good at a state level, but not good enough that he would have represented America in the Olympics. It's basically an out-and-out exaggeration that wrestlers have. It's like when you get wrestlers who have like an amateur wrestling background, they'll really, really sort of like exaggerate how good they were, just to sort of like, you know, make them bigger stars than what they actually were. In the Middle East, the Von Erichs their TV show got shown in the Middle East and in Israel. They ended up doing a tour over there based on that. They were able to like reach other countries. You know, they were a big act. And I think even within Texas, they couldn't really do this because of sort of like, this is a small independent film. That big match with Kerry when he battles Ric Flair for the world title in honour of his brother, that crowd was huge. I mean, it looked like a crowd you would get, and as rapturous as, say, an FA Cup match. And when he actually wins the title, the crowd go crazy. It was like a really emotional moment. In the film, you just see like Doris, the mum, just like watching it on TV. Could have really done a bit more than that to make it look like special. I know if somebody who actually grew up a big Von Erich fan, and he was actually there. He went to that show. He went with his dad as a kid, and he said it was like one of the most emotional days of his life. When you know it was such a really big deal. And I don't think the film really capitalized how big they were and how sort of like, you know, what stars they were, you know, within that community.
So do you think that could be a combination? I said Sean Durkin played it almost flat, that he didn't have the emotional ups and downs of the melodrama, or was it budget?
I think some of it was budget. You can't recreate that sort of setting, but you could have used some like stock footage of big crowds and tied that in there, or you could have had sort of, rather than just one person watching TV at home, you could have basically shown like lots of different bars with people watching the TV show in the bars, or people like listening to radio, that sort of thing. I don't even know if the match was actually shown live on TV at the time. But the point is, they could have done something of that. They could have had sort of shown people like really celebrating and stuff like that. And they didn't. And I think that's a curious thing. It's one of the things that I think it's sort of down. I think I was trying to do like a realistic portrayal of wrestling without going hyperbole on what wrestling can be, because when wrestling's, even though the stage nature of it, you know, it does touch people, and when it's sort of like over the top and goes thing, it really is something to behold. But I think it was maybe like pulling back on that to try and make this like a story of a family drama and a brotherhood rather than sort of, and like sort of keep the wrestling kind of restrained somewhat. That's just possibly my take. Yeah.
Bit more grounded, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that that's one of the questions that I had for you guys. If you basically, if you felt that you understood how the wrestling, like the promotion of it worked, as opposed to putting matches together, because I felt it was confusing to somebody who wasn't a wrestling fan how it put that together, because they had this thing where in the first match that you see with Kevin when he's going to be going up against a wrestler called Harley Race, who's the champion. And incidentally, the guy who played Harley Race was awesome because he looked and just talked and just was just like Harley Race was. That's the guy who throws him out of the ring and injures him.
Yeah, that was one thing. Yeah, we talk about wrestling being stage, and to me, it's like a stage show with stuntmen. But you felt the pain on part of it. When he's thrown out of the ring and he's hitting the concrete floor, you felt that, you know?
Yeah.
I cringed.
Yeah, that was quite a dramatic scene. And I thought, is this poor kid going to get up? But I certainly didn't get the feeling that they were sort of rock stars or huge stars. I think it was very grounded and it was very family drama. God, there was enough of family drama to fill anybody's expectations. I didn't get that impression of the huge popularity that they had.
The reverse of that was that they were so big and so popular and so ingrained in the culture of Texas at the time, is that when everything went the other way, when you have the deaths and the suicides and the sort of the revelations about what was going on, it was so heartbreaking for the fans and the people of Dallas that it really destroyed wrestling for years there. Because of what had happened and because of the tragedy and the curse or whatever you want to call it, the fans didn't want to know they didn't want any wrestling. Even the WWE.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It destroyed the city. Even afterwards, after Von Erickson sort of like their promotion had gone, the WWF basically tried to run shows there with Hulk Hogan. Even Hulk Hogan, and who was at the time at the top of the thing, the shows there did not draw. They drew okay, but they did not draw what they should have done. It was really tough. It wasn't until the late 90s when you had The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, and when the WWF became this big, massive, like, hot thing again, which itself, the WWF, that's the story in itself, had basically gone big and then took a massive downturn. And in the 90s, when with Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Undertaker and that ilk, it became like massive again. It was only then when they came back to Dallas that Dallas really sort of could pull any sort of crowds for wrestling. Everything with the Von Erichs, it just soured people so much and was too much of a reminder of what they basically went through. But it really destroyed the city for years.
If you were going to make a film about the Von Erichs, how differently would you approach the material, Darren?
I wouldn't do a film now. I would do a TV show. Because, and I would basically expand it to the other things that were going on in, I would basically do a TV on the Von Erichs, but also on the world class, the promotion was called World Class Championship Wrestling. I would do a TV show based on the whole promotion, because there are so many other stories that that basically were around there, which were just as sort of dramatic. And I would because let's say you have like an 8-episode TV show, so then you'd be able to like bring Chris back in and tell his story. You'd also be able to tell, you know, the story of what happened after this film ended, because Fritz obviously had died, but also his wife divorced him because she basically just sort of had enough, and she blamed him for basically what had happened to all the kids. So she actually, you know, and I'm actually surprised that they didn't, you know, normally at the end where you get the sort of the little, like little captions that tell you what happened to him. Never told you what happened to Fritz. And I think it would have been interesting to show that his wife had basically eventually, you see at the end of a film that she's kind of had enough, when she basically starts doing her artwork and decides to start doing her own thing, but she actually divorced him. So I would do a TV show, and there are enough personalities around it that could have basically beyond the Von Erichs. I mean, an interesting thing is, early on, you see them have a tag match, Kevin and David. And the two guys, even though they didn't name them, one of them was a guy called Bruiser Brody, who died in Puerto Rico. He was actually stabbed to death just before a wrestling show by the promoter and wrestler, a guy called Invader One. Stabbed him to death in the dressing room. And there's a whole story on that as well, because he basically didn't go to jail because of that. A lot of the wrestlers who witnessed it were basically sort of never came back to trial, because in Puerto Rico, let's just say that the wrestling scene, it's a dodgy scene, shall we say. He basically died in Puerto Rico. But the other guy was a guy called Gino Hernandez, and he also died of a drug overdose while he was wrestling in World Class. And there is a lot of speculation that he might have actually been murdered, that he might have actually been forced drugs into his system. There's a lot of sort of stories that something didn't, that the official story doesn't quite work, and that he himself was involved in, I think, organised crime. So again, that you've just got two wrestlers there who were just sort of like extras and weren't even given their names. But in the real story, they had tragic ends. So the Von Erich curse didn't just sort of stick to the Von Erichs. It affected, you know, wrestlers around them as well, that whole area. So I would do a TV show. I would have it more true to the actual sort of timeline of everything, because they did mess with the timeline quite a lot. But yeah, my thing would have been a TV show, because I think it would, even with this film out, and this film's great and does a real good job, but I think there's a lot of thing as well to do a TV show that would basically cover this as an accompaniment.
Unfortunately, that TV show isn't there as yet. So people who want to learn more, and this has been absolutely fascinating. I learned a hell of a lot more. I thought I read up some stuff in it, or I've learned a lot more here. But Darren, where would you point people to learn more about the Von Erichs and that time period? What should they watch? What should they read?
Okay, so first up, there are two documentaries. One's a documentary called Heroes of World Class. I've got a DVD of it. I don't know if it's still on DVD. It'll be on YouTube, probably illegally, or Daily Motion or something like that. So really long documentary, which was done by someone who was there for periods of it. And it's a really good documentary. The WWF also did a documentary, which was on DVD. It's a little more slicker and a little less factually correct. It has a lot of people talking about it who weren't actually there, just wrestlers who wrestle for the WWF talking. But it does have a few people who aren't on the other DVD. So I would say both of them are worth watching together as a to get sort of an idea of what. And there's also some great footage of what it was like, the matches and the thing of everything. If you want the real story and the real gritty story, I would recommend checking out a guy called Dave Meltzer. Because Dave Meltzer is a journalist who's been writing about wrestling for years and years. He started a newsletter, I think it was the late 70s, early 80s, called The Wrestling Observer, which was kind of like the variety of the wrestling world. It's like, you know, it's what a lot of the wrestlers would read in the back. It investigated what was going on behind the scenes with the sort of with the promotions, the business, the booking, that sort of thing. And he's been doing that for years. What's worth doing is maybe sort of subscribing to his site, because a lot of his newsletters are actually on the internet now. And basically just sort of checking out the stuff that he did on the Von Erichs. I've reread a couple of his articles before doing this podcast just to get a lot of things fresh in my head. And anything wrestling related, I will basically check out Dave Meltzer. As a historian, there's basically no one who does what he does. But there are sort of like really good articles out there. It's a case of beware of sort of like more modern ones, because there's a lot of people who basically will talk and don't know the full story, like I'm doing now, I have to admit. I know the full story, but I don't know the exact details. But yeah, definitely check out a guy called Dave Meltzer for his work. He's also started doing some of his newsletters in book form. So to Google Von Erich and Dave Meltzer and you'll get it. There is also, just spring to mind, there's a TV show which aired on Channel 4, but you'll probably be able to get episodes on YouTube and stuff, called The Dark Side of the Ring. And each episode of that talks about a different aspect of pro wrestling. So, for example, there's an episode about Bruiser Brody being murdered in Puerto Rico, which I told you about. There's an episode about the various deaths, like Owen Hart, who sadly died in a really bad accident, was doing a stunt and fell from the rafters of the auditorium on a live show and died. There's the Chris Benoit, who was a guy who basically killed his wife and kids and then himself. I'm really selling wrestling for all these people who don't watch wrestling here. But this show, this show called Dark Side of the Ring, it has an episode on the Von Erichs, which is really worth watching. For a sort of like a starter thing, I would recommend those things. But wrestling itself is a wonderful thing that brings joy to a lot of people. But as somebody once said, it's a business that eats its young. Because there are so many wrestlers who have sadly passed away. Yeah. And I have to say, there's stuff going on right now, which we've not really got time to go into, that basically do like question your fandom at times. But it's a thing that wrestling is something which has basically made my life a lot better. Because apart from just enjoying what's on the screen and when I go to shows, I've made some wonderful friends because of it. And I've been to places like, I've been to like Las Vegas for wrestling conventions. I've been to New York for WrestleMania. So it's something that has a really positive effect on my life. But I'm not blind to the fact that there is a real darkness behind the scenes, pretty much like the way that there is with Hollywood or with the music scene, or I would say any sporting organization, you know, that you hold. There is a darkness in there. It's just that wrestling seems to have this more spectacular of that darkness with so many sort of deaths and murders in it. I realize I'm probably putting off people for life from watching wrestling, you know, after this, but it's just one thing as a wrestling fan. It's something that if you dive into it, it's something that you sort of you can never not be aware of.
Wow.
And I think with the Iron Claw, it has that darkness and a sadness with it.
Yeah.
Yet it remains a really great film.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good.
I must admit, I liked our somewhat different approach to our review for this movie. Thank you, Darren, because I certainly learned a lot. And actually, I have to be honest, knowing all of this now and chatting to you, I want to go watch the film again.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't spot half of those. But,
yeah. And what about you, listeners? What are your thoughts on the movie? As always, please send your comments in to us. Darren, thank you very much for the idea and the steering on this podcast. It's been a fascinating journey. And to everyone else, see you on the next show or at the Flicks.